Welcome to Belgrade Theatre's official podcast. My name is Hannah. I work in the marketing department, and today I'm joined by two amazing local creatives. Not only are they setting the tone of what Belgrade Theatre is and our core values, but they're also creating impactful stories that will have a lasting impact on the communities that we want to serve. Today I'm joined by the amazing Sianna Bangura and Sarah Gathigu. Sianna is actually the writer for Swim Auntie Swim, our home-produced show that will be running from Belgrade Theatre from Monday the 20th of May to Saturday the 1st of June 2024. For those of you who don't know or should know, Sianna is a renowned playwright, poet, fierce Leonian, and all-around creative. Not only does she do poetry, she writes, she directs, she's worked in film, theatre, dabbles in podcasts, and has created exhibitions and festivals. There's so much on her resume, we'd be here all day. And Sarah, she's amazing. She's an amazing assistant director who recently got the role for the Regional Theatre Young Directors Scheme, known as RTYDS. Sarah is an amazing creative assistant director. She also does podcasts, she writes blogs, and she's an all-around amazing creative. And I'm so happy to have both of these lovely ladies on the pod today. So thank you guys for joining me today.
Hey. Thank you
for having us. So Sianna, I just want to ask you, can you please tell me a bit more about yourself? Where did you start and what made you write?
Ooh, big question. So where did I start? How did I start? Oh gosh. So I know everyone says this, but for as long as I can remember, I've always kind of wanted to be a writer or a creative in some way, shape or form. Communication has always been like one of my gifts, I suppose. I started writing creatively like from a really early age, like performing from a really early age. I'm originally from Southeast London and I've found myself in Coventry and I've lived here for over 12 years. So very much a local Midlands creative as well as kind of across London and the Midlands. And in terms of getting into theatre, so I actually started off as an assistant producer on a production called Fierce in 2014 for Camden People's Theatre. And that's where it was quite soon after graduating from university. So I sunk my teeth into theatre kind of by accident through that piece of work. And then dabbled in a little bit of like directing here and there, but really and truly ends up moving very swiftly into production and working across theatre production, but also film production, basically making documentaries. So I run a house called Courageous Films. And in terms of kind of coming to the fore as a playwright, well, I'd say that kind of started somewhere around 2017. I believe I was at Derby Theatre and I was on like a short course that they were running basically. And I ended up doing this, surprisingly, this like movement piece basically called Chaotic, which I feel like I will have to bring out of the archives now I've got a bit more experience up my sleeves and look at that and be like, what was that? But we did that and it was just a really good experience basically to be the playwright in the room rather than kind of the producer, the person kind of making stuff happen in the background. And really just a different way to apply my writing skills already. So I've been a performance poet for years before that, basically. And, you know, novels and short things like this. And I've got a poetry collection called Elephant. So I've dabbled across prose and poetry and fiction and nonfiction. So kind of coming to the playwriting world was, I guess, an interesting and appropriate next step, but it is definitely different. This kind of emphasis on showing and not telling, that has been an ongoing thing to master as I come from a world where you really have to tell, you know what I mean? but yeah, so then, you know, 2018 happened, and again, I was actually at Belgrade kind of as a freelance producer, and I was running Senior Youth Theatre, so that was amazing, and I directed the piece for Senior Youth Theatre at the time. I think it was called Being Human, so it was really like a futurist kind of piece of work. And at that same time, so lots of things happening all at once really in my world, I ended up joining the Critical Mass Writers Programme basically that was hosted here at Belgrade, and that is where the first seeds of Swim Auntie Swim were born. Lots of influences kind of prior to that, but Amma and Blessing, our two of our amazing aunties, started to find their life in my head and in my world basically. And yeah, just ends up over the last few years like developing that piece of work. In 2019, I ended up being at the rep and was on the Foundry program and worked on a play called Layla. So again, tapping into my Sierra Leonean roots basically and connected with the wonderful Madame Annie Domingo And yes, because of all of those connections and paths and things like that, yeah, they all kind of came together to bring Swim Auntie Swim back. 2020, many of us were stuck at home basically. And I had the time really to develop this work and again, pull it out of the archives and develop it with some support from English Touring Theatre, who I was also producing for in the past as well. And yeah, you know, worked with Madeline Cluje, Maddie, who'd been a supporter of this work for a long time as well. And yeah, finally, everything aligned to be able to now kind of properly develop it and get it commissioned again at Belgrade. And here we are today. So it's a much longer story than that, but that's probably long enough.
So you mentioned that you started your critical mass journey at Belgrade Theatre.
Yeah.
So how did critical mass start the journey to Swim Auntie Swim? Can you just explain it a little bit more to those that don't know? Because it's a fairly new script, a new play. What is Swim Auntie Swim? And why did you decide to write this specific story?
Yeah, so 2018 was when I was on the writer's program here called Critical Mass. And it was for like new emerging writers, basically. And I had a really wonderful cohort and we were all experimenting with different things, basically. And I remember, you know, we got an exercise from Ola Annie Michaud, I believe. And I can't even remember what the details were, but we got this writing exercise. And, you know, I ended up writing this scene of these two kind of older middle-aged black women, basically, one in the gele and one in leopard print. And Sarah's, you know, this has remained to this day. And they were just sitting at a pool, basically. And yeah, you know, a little bit of banter between them. One of them was quite fearful of the water, the other one wasn't so much. And the seeds were just sown from there, really. Shared a little bit of that writing with the group and they loved it, basically. And I think that response from the group gave me some encouragement to basically probably go forward and build these characters some more. And you know, why did I write the play? I mean, I could go on all day about why, but you know, it's and I'm sure Sarah will add a bit more to this, but the play is absolutely an exploration of grief and loss, but it's also this joyful story of what it means to start again and have new be in a new season after change and transition, basically, no matter what age you are. And for me, you know, I've experienced grief and loss, and I'm also from Sierra Leone, on the west coast of Africa. And so actually the healing power of water has actually been a very present thing in my culture and the history, the healing power of water, but also its threats, basically. And all of these things have like come together, I suppose, over a number of years. And what do I do? Primarily, I'm a storyteller. And so this is just another way of kind of making sense of the world, making sense of my own emotions, my own kind of histories and those from observation. I've also for a number of years been a campaigner looking at state violence, particularly police brutality, and spending a lot of time with those kind of families who have experienced that and observing the stories of mothers and sisters and aunties, and just basically this question of like, what happens to people after this? What happens to mothers and women after this? Basically, all of these things, you know, became a melting pot. And have found their way somehow into the world of Swim. Sarah, what are your kind of observations of, I suppose, the journey of Swim from you kind of being newer to joining us on this journey?
Yeah, to be honest, I think I remember you telling me briefly, like...
Back in the day.
I don't know when it was, probably like a couple of months ago or a year ago, meeting Sienna and being like, her telling me the story of Swim Auntie Swim and just having in my head, like, this idea of, I need to be in that room. I need to be the assistant director. So when I saw the call out, I was like, 100% I have to be in there. Because I just love the sentiment of being able to celebrate our aunties and our mums, because we don't get that. Mm. We hardly get any black stories in theatre. And then when you add in like the elder generations,
correct,
even smaller. So it was like, I want to be able to be a part of a play that I know is going to be like so impactful for not just people of like my generation, but also the elders that have come before us, and honoring them and giving them their flowers for what they have done. So I think in terms of like seeing the story of Swim just kind of like develop, seeing the characters develop, seeing like their backstories and how all their timelines are integrated, and just kind of like understanding each character's story arc and how that has developed from the first time I read the script to now after week two of rehearsals has been it's been amazing
because it's always evolving, the scripts and the stories.
It's had to evolve a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarah's been so key in helping it evolve and asking the right questions. And especially when you live with something for such a long time. And actually, Maddie would be part of this too, because she and I have really lived with this for years and years. Getting fresh eyes on it can be painful, but also incredibly important because people are asking questions that you've assumed you know the answer. But you have to, again, theatre, you have to find a way for people to, for audiences to understand it, no matter kind of where they're coming from. And just on that too, you know, so this story is about these three West African women, one from Ghana, one from Sierra Leone, and one from Nigeria. But also it's such a local story, right? From Coventry, the West Midlands. And, you know, I myself, I'm originally from Southeast London and my heritage, my family heritage is Sierra Leonean, but I've lived in the Midlands for over 12 years in Coventry specifically. So also telling this tale of Coventry, basically this melting pot, that feels really important because again, people sometimes forget that there's black people up in the Midlands, you know. Sarah's local, like born and bred. And it's just the thing too, that this particular city, you know, that diaspora, you know, is very present, the West African diaspora, the Southern African diaspora. And of course, we know the Midlands are a very high Asian population as well. But like making sure, I think Maddie says, you know, West Africa meets the West Midlands. That feels really, really important. So we've got the lovely character Danny as well, who, you know, is very much representing the West Midlands and Coventry in this story. And I think, you know, for me, the four of them together is just really this interesting combination of, you know, bringing these cultures together and in an unlikely place, maybe the swimming pool, basically, and seeing this relationship develop over a period of time. And I'm excited for audiences to see that.
That's the thing, because you mentioned that a lot of people don't really know that there's like African people in the West Midlands, but, you know, to just compare it to like when we go to London to the West End and they create black stories. Oftentimes you find that the audiences are full of black people, like West Africans and et cetera, Caribbean. But what do you think is missing in the West Midlands? Because you often find that people from the global majority, black people, West Africa, Caribbean, we don't often think that theatre is for us only because the stories aren't for us. It's not very accommodating. And also we don't really feel, I would say, valued. So how do you think, what type of legacy do you think Swim Out to Swim is going to create? Because when I read the script, I thought, this is amazing. My mom, who can barely comprehend English, I could take her to this, you know. My dad, you know what I mean, a 70 something year old, I can take her to this. My sisters would love this. And I thought, like, when I read all the characters, like even Danny, like I see a bit of like my family members in every single one of them. But what do you think is missing in a place like Coventry, where oftentimes we don't find like African people come into the theatre? What do you think that we can Swim On To Swim is going to, like, what type of legacy do you think is going to leave in the city?
You know, it's funny because I was going to say, I don't even think it's necessarily just a Coventry or West Midlands thing. This is theatre, this particular question about who, because you were talking about London, right? Again, from London. But if you go to, I think it's there's a change to some degree, but I think it's still fair to say you go to the West End and certain shows kind of thing, you would think where are the black people, where are we in London, do you know what I mean? And I went, you know, very recently and I saw the latest version of For Black Boys, and it was like, it's about the story resonating. That place was full of black folk because we saw ourselves in that story. And although of course it's not that, you know, you should only see yourself in stories where people look like you, but for the most part we live in a society where the default is whiteness. And so actually it means that we have to always find ourselves in spaces that don't look like us. So it is actually so important to be able to say, actually, this story is ours. This story is about us. And as Sarah said, it's even just about thinking about the generation that we're depicting on stage, right? You know, we're looking at, I'm not in my 50s, but we're looking at aunties who are in their 50s and their 60s, basically hitting retirement, are in or post menopause. We don't have these stories, basically. Yeah. And these women are not invisible. They shouldn't be invisible.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just such a delight, a joy to have people like Annie Domingo on stage who are still holding it down. They've had a long career, an iconic career, and they're still going. And this needs to be celebrated. So for me, it's like, actually, if you tell certain stories, people will come and see it. Yeah. And it's not just that as well, because I also don't think, I think theatres kind of expect that, oh, people just come to us. You do have to do the legwork and go to people. For me, I'm a community practitioner. You have to take the stories to the people so that they feel like they see themselves. And actually, they'll remember. And then they want, you know, we want them to feel like Belgrade is their home. And I know that Corey is really passionate about that in particular. So for me, one of the legacies, I hope that folks, number one, start, you know, going swimming because it's a life skill. But also I want them to be like, okay, Belgrade is like my place, you know, like the aunties in my life, they're very excited about this piece of work. I've had them involved actually in the development phase as well. My mum is so thrilled to be part of this work. If you look very closely at our iconic image, certain faces there. But if you think about like that shared ownership, of course, it's a story that I created, but it's being brought to life by all these like amazing creatives as well. And I just love the idea that, you know, you said your mum, your aunties, your dad, you know, who, you know, maybe it's, like, English isn't their first language, but they can translate and be like, that's me still, you know?
They see themselves involved in it.
Yeah.
I think just like going off of what you said as well, like it is about accessibility. Mm. And as you said, it's not about like, the theatre can't just stand here as an industry and just think, well, we need to open the door and that's about accessibility. Yeah. No, you need to go out into the community and talk to people and see what they go through. And that's kind of the whole point of what co-creation, is what Belgrade is trying to do, is about going into the community and finding out what stories do they want to see on stage. Because when you feel represented, when you feel heard, that's when you're like, okay, I'm going to go and support. Mm-hmm. If I feel like I'm involved in this, if I feel like I am seen and represented in this, then I'm going to come and support. I'm going to come and see what this is all about. And I think I started to see seedlings of that when I was working previously on Big Auntie, which was a home production here at Belgrade, directed and devised by Corey Campbell, who's the creative director here. And I think seeing that and seeing like people like my mom and my aunties coming and watching the show and then being like, oh, actually, I want to come and see the show again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's so rare to be able to go to a theatre and not watch the show just once, but wanting to come back twice. Three times and being able to watch a show. And I think that this is something that I definitely believe that Swim is going to do.
Mm.
Even before I was announced as assistant director, I was already hearing so much buzz for this show. I cannot stress that enough.
It's good
honestly,
to hear.
People were like, oh, there's this show on at Belgrade that we have to go see. And I was like, I'm working on it.
Yep. You know what's exciting too? Because again, just back to the Midlands thing specifically, right? So again, I think what I'm seeing is, in many ways, I love that we're starting here rather than in London. Obviously, it's a Coventry story, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's something about like, actually, we need to encourage people to come up as well. Like, it's not every day. And I'm saying this as someone who's originally a Londoner. Like, there's an expectation that like, oh, okay, we'll go to London, especially for stories like this.
Yeah.
But actually showing people, reminding them that you come up here as well, like that we can actually like break down these even like regional borders feels so important. Because then when, inshallah, we actually make it on tour, you know, people, it's like, yeah, they've already seen it up in Cove. Now they're going to see it in London. Now they're going to see it in Manchester, whatever, whatever. And like that feels super duper important as kind of this emphasis on the fact that our story should not just live like in one particular geography. You will find us everywhere, you know, even if
we want everyone to come see it.
We want everyone to come and see it. And to, we keep saying this, was whatever culture, translate and you'll see yourself in Amma, in Blessing, you know, in Fatu. And again, just this thing about like knowing your neighbor as well. We live in very trying times, basically.
Right.
So it's really important that these stories that we get to see them for ourselves and recognize our rituals, but that others learn about us as well. Not in a weird extractive way, but learning about your neighbor and knowing that if you live in a city like Coventry where it's really multicultural, it's actually very important to like know about some West African traditions and our foods and our music and this and that. And, you know, some of these themes and motifs are universal, right? This is a very culturally specific piece of work, but it's also the language of grief is universal, actually. And I think you get to see that when you look at the interactions between Danny and the aunties.
Mm.
So I just want to touch on what Sarah was saying regarding co-creation.
Mm.
And I find it really useful, the fact that Belgrade is going into these communities and finding stories that we all want to hear and we all want to see on stage. So I just want to ask both of you regarding the swimming aspect of the show. You see, because we're all black, and there is a stigma where black people can't swim.
Mm.
And the story, not to spoil anything, it's regarding three women learning how to swim in their mid-50s. I just want to ask you guys, in past 50s or?
Mid-50s plus.
So I just want to ask you guys, like, what are your personal stigmas regarding swimming? Because where I'm from, women don't go swimming.
Mm.
It's seen as like a male thing. And also like when you come to the UK, people go swimming, but they're in bathing suits. Where I come from, we're fully clothed. So I wouldn't want to go swimming in my jeans. And do you know what I mean? I don't want to be fully covered in water. So that's why I'm 27. I don't know how to swim till this day. Okay. So there is that's because I have like this cultural barrier myself that's stopping me from swimming, and also just because like modesty, I don't want to be seen half naked. So what are your own stigmas regarding swimming, and why is it such a universal thing where people always assume that black people can't swim?
Oh, this is so good. Do you want to start? I've got more to say about this.
Okay. I would say my own personal relationship with swimming in general has been a bit rocky. So my first encounter with water, with a pool of water, I almost drowned. And my mum actually like saved my life. She like yanked me out the water.
Wow.
She cannot swim. She cannot swim to this day.
But she found a way.
But she yanked me out of the water, and as soon as that happened, she was like putting you in swimming lessons straight away. So me and my sister were put into swimming lessons, and we went to, being raised in Coventry, we went to Foz Hill Swimming Leisure Centre, learned how to swim there, and then transferred to, when they knocked that down, transferred over to Coventry Baths. I'm so local, I have to Cov Baths, yeah. Transferred over to Cov Baths and learned how to swim, and got to a point where we were almost competitive. Yeah, we were like, my mum, I find it so funny because she was really intensely like passionate about us swimming. Can you even restrict her?
If you could all see her now, she's really showing us how to swim.
She could not do it, but she was very passionate about us being able to do it. And I think that even though I could swim, it was never a sport that was enjoyable. And I think it's only when I became a little bit older and I stopped swimming like competitively or in like training that I then found like how relaxing and beautiful the water could be. But even then, like, I'm still afraid of water. So even just the idea of like open water, which is in the show as well, that's very scary. And I think that for black people, it is like the barrier about it. I think also like things such as like hair and like not having accessibility, to be honest, not being like things being able to be provided for us. And what you're saying, Hannah, about modesty, like, why don't we have full bathing suits available for people that want to still partake in swimming but still be able to remain true to their values and have full body swimming suits? It's only recently that we've started looking into it, but why has it been so long?
Yeah.
So I think, just like my relationship with the pool is still afraid of it, but slowly understanding like the power of it when it comes to water and swimming and how beneficial and relaxing it is, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally as well. So that's kind of like my relationship to it. But I think it's quite interesting because even though my mum doesn't know how to swim, she does want to learn how to swim. So I'm also hoping that...
Bring it to the show.
Yeah, I want to bring it to the show, and I'm hoping that it will kind of like help and influence her to be like, actually, I've been saying I want to learn how to swim for years. Let me now learn myself.
Especially if I've sent my kids to do it. I love that for us, for you, for her. I love
so
that.
My kids will swim. Me, on the other hand.
Our parents are like that though, aren't they? Like, there's, you know, it's that funny thing of like all these things that they know, if I can't do it, my children should do it. And sometimes it can be overbearing, but a lot of times it comes from this really like important like place of like, I want you to have like what I didn't have. And I really love, I never knew all that about Sarah. So it's nice to hear that.
You know what's interesting as well? This whole idea of like, especially if like black parents do this a lot of like, what I didn't have, I want my kids to have. But I don't think that they realize, like, you can still have that
you
too.
You can still have it and show us.
That's what I love about the plague as well, because it's like their kids have all gone.
That's it.
But they're still investing in themselves. And I think that's why, again, I love that whole idea of like really honoring the elder generations, because these three women are not dead. They're alive.
They're alive.
And they're going out there and investing in themselves. So I think that's another thing that I love.
That's what I like about the three characters, is like, they don't care about no one. They just try to swim.
You will all see that one of them, they're a bit reluctant, but, you know, the main thing is that they get there in the end. I love
they
that.
They still have ambition. That's the thing.
Yeah. And it's important. I love that too, because, you know, I mean, I'll swell back to that swimming question, but this idea of like, people thinking that when you reach a certain age, you know, aging is an honor. And we live in a society that doesn't make you feel that way, especially as a woman. It makes you feel like, oh, well, you're past it. You're dead. Even in your 30s, bruh, it's enough. It's like, my friends, I'm in my prime. I'm here.
We're not dead.
But they make you feel like you're over the hill. And like, again, this is across cultures, isn't it? But then now to add to like other, you know, our own cultures as well, where actually I do think in our culture, there is an honoring of aging. But I think it's when you come to the West, then it's and you're out of context, it's harder to do so. So again, as Sarah says, this idea of these women being able to have an like life and opportunity in their late 40s, their 50s, their 60s, that feels incredibly, incredibly important. And swimming as well. So there's so many layers. And what's interesting too is like very, very recently, One Extra, they actually did a feature on this and unpacked it a little bit more. Because the first thing to say is we need to absolutely push back on that stereotype, which is actually a racist stereotype that black people can't swim. That's just nonsense, especially because most of us come from countries that are like near bodies of water. Like I'm from Sierra Leone, literally on the west coast of Africa. So there's already something about, again, at home, particular relationships with water are not necessarily mirrored when you come to the West. So, you know, black people are people of contradiction. Let's put it this way. We have, it's true though, we have many things going on at the same time that sometimes it doesn't make sense. But you have to think about this. We have mythologies, and actually they, across different cultures, there are other mythologies that are very, very similar. But we have mythologies which include the mythologies of water deities like Mamiwata. So for instance, and Mamiwata, she's very present in our play, right? And the story of Mamiwata, the lore of Mami, it, you know, she is a protector of the waters, but she can also, you know, she can get busy when she needs to, basically, if you cross her. And I think in many ways, we were exploring this in the room too, I think a lot of parents would have used her lore as a way to stop kids from like going to the water and drowning, all that kind of stuff, and kind of saying, oh, you know, Mami will catch you, da da da. So stopping you from like kind of, you know, being reckless in the water, shall I say. So I think that sometimes you get, even when there are things, you know, it's probably like not true, whatever, but you still hold some of these ideas and it can leave you fearful of the water. But it's also true that people have really loving memories of water. And also then, as black people as well, we've got to remember, we have a whole history of a disruption, which was the Atlantic slave trade, and knowing that many of our ancestors now live underwater, basically, right? And actually, if you think about the history and the lore of Mamiwata as well, her vengeance in terms of, vengeance for those people. So there's lots of things about kind of, you know, water and it being a space of trauma as well as a space of healing for us that live side by side. And now when you bring it to kind of the West too, I think what was really interesting about that conversation I had on One Extra was that they were talking about accessibility more than anything, right? So literally things like, yeah, it's true, like black people, our hair, et cetera, like chlorine, all these things, you know, if, you know, it's just important to make sure, it's really nice that we've got like Soul Cap and people and like brands like this that are thinking about caps that are just bigger to be able to carry, I've got locks, hold our hair, our afros, et cetera, right? You know, making it, and actually say modesty, that, you know, black or otherwise or whatever your religion, some of us don't want to necessarily like show all our flesh. So again, it should be accessible, not just like special thing to have swimming costumes that are like more modest, that will make people feel comfortable to swim. And then like, let's talk about accessibility. Many of us, so for instance, me, I did take all the usual swimming lessons. Seven Islands was my place, like in South London, Surrey Quays. And we went to the classes and stuff like that. But after a point, you stop basically. And there's something about like, for whatever reason, it still feels like swimming is this like elite thing that, you know, like, it shouldn't be, but it's something that isn't necessarily like emphasized as an easy thing to like carry on. So I think the big question is about accessibility in all its forms. And that can be like a blocker for lots of people. And then if you had been working class as well, like class is never something that is divorced from race and culture as well. So I just personally think that it's many, many layers. We've got history, mythology, ideas of accessibility, and also, yeah, just this actually idea, if you don't really see that many people around you that swim, as a black person, if you, you know, aren't, you're not fortunate to be around lots of people that swim, it's just not something that's going to be part of like your everyday life. You're not going to be like, yo, let's chill and like go to the pool, right? Where you know, but if it was something that was really part of like the fabric of your community and how you socialize and do things, then of course you would swim more. So for me, I think there's something about, it's really exciting to have like crews like Swim Dem, for example, who are encouraging people to get out there and swim as a community. And doesn't have to be the solo thing. And for me, as someone who I used to really love swimming and then kind of became really self-conscious about like body stuff, again, the swimming costume, and then I almost drowned, like all these things, it just puts you off. But I, before the pandemic, I took adult refresher classes and actually really reignited my love for swimming and enjoyment of it. And I hope to do that again. I've never swam in like a big open body of water. And I you know, I would quite like to do it, but am I a bit scared of it? Yes, I'm scared. But no, I feel like,
do it. You wrote it.
I know, I wrote it. Can you imagine? I even wrote this piece of work, so I have to really follow through, don't I? But I actually do think, no matter what, I think actually as black people especially, we are called to water. You know, as human beings, we're mostly water, aren't we? And for me, I always find it really, I find a lot of peace just being near bodies of water, especially in times of like great stress. So for me, there is that calling, and you'll see in the play that, yeah, particularly one character, there is just this calling basically, and it can be quite inexplicable. And so, you know, I hope that this piece of work, and all the other pieces of work before it and that will come after will just help to like break that myth, because it is a myth and it is actually rooted in a lot of racist stereotyping about Black people in swimming. And so we need to just refocus the conversation to more about like accessibility and inaccessibility more than anything else, you know, especially for communities like Black folk who tend to be excluded from a lot of things.
That's what I like about the script and the characters, because it's kind of like it's going away from that stereotype, like, oh, Black people can't swim. It's more or less like we're discussing everything that you just said, but in a storytelling aspect. And then you've got Danny that, like, he just brings like an amazing feeling to the show.
So some tenderness.
That's why I want a lot of people to that's why I want everyone to come see it, because it is not, it's not stereotypical, but it's, we're talking about the actual reasons why
that's very
Black
important,
older women don't swim,
and holding that trauma, the darkness and the light all at once, basically. This idea, again, I think it's really important to just emphasize that, of course, there are traumatic things attached to water, but it's also, it can be the space of great, great healing as well.
So with less than 4 weeks to go to Swim Auntie Swim official premiere, I just want to ask both of you, how are you guys feeling? What type of emotions, like, are you feeling? Like, what's the energy like in rehearsals? Are we getting there? What's happening?
Assistant director, babe.
I think we're at the end of the second week of rehearsals, and I always get the feeling that when you get to, like, the second week of rehearsals, there is a bit of a lull in the room, because you're just like, we want to get the work done, and there's still things to kind of like figure out and navigate around, and you're still finding your feet, but you do get bits of frustration and irritation. I think a good thing about the rehearsal that room that we are in and that has been crafted by the direction of Maddie is that we still hold space for to feel all those things, to feel the frustration, to feel the anger, to feel literally just angry with everything that's going on.
Confused and anxious. Like, it's a room that you're able to have all these emotions and frustrations and be able to air them and be able to just kind of like let them go as well. So it's like, you never, we always acknowledge like what's going on in the room, but there's still a sense of like joy as well. And I think it's like making sure that we keep the heart of like what you've written, Sienna, like we keep it at the heart of the room and why we want to do this. So I think that there's a lot of love and joy in the room. A lot of people that come into the room that aren't with us every day always acknowledge that, that there's a sense of joy in the room.
And community. We've been able to build a real space of community. And again, we've only, like, as a whole company, been together, an ensemble, been together for like a couple of weeks, basically.
But
it's been, we're really fortunate. Everyone's kind of really gelled and got together. And as Sarah says, you know, we're actually dealing with a play that is about grief. And I think we were saying the other day about, actually, it shows up in ways that are like very surprising. Like, to be really specific, this piece of work is dedicated to three of my late friends. And so I think we all feel this really important and heavy weight of like the responsibility of honoring that and honoring our cultures, right? And again, honoring the fact that this is representing, you know, people who aren't usually represented. So I think with that weight of responsibility, we take great care putting the work together, but it can be a frustrating process because it feels like we're moving slower or we're not quite getting it or whatever. But this is a poetic piece of work as well, not just in the writing, but also the visuals, the lighting, the sounds, and of course movement as well. So I just personally want to shout out Gabby, our movement director, who is doing this beautiful work with, you know, older, more mature, seasoned bodies. And everyone is just doing this beautiful choreography and really speaking to our cultures and telling the story through their movement as well. And I think that's another thing that really excites me about this piece of work. And, you know, working with the concept and motif of water and the waves, all of that actually affords you a lot of creativity in that realm as well.
So the pod is coming to an end, and I just want to say thank you, lovely lady, so much for joining me today. It's honestly been such a pleasure. I'm so thrilled and excited to be working alongside you all. I'm also so excited as an audience member to come and watch Swim Auntie Swim. I can't wait for its success, and I can't wait for everybody to watch it and indulge in this, because it's going to be iconic and it's going to be amazing. So I just want to remind everyone, tickets for Swim Auntie Swim is still available at belgrade.co.uk. Running from Belgrade, Monday the 20th of May to Saturday the 1st of June. Don't miss out, because you don't want to miss out.
Yeah, thank you so much, Hannah. And thank you to Belgrade, the team. I just want to shout out my wonderful cast, my wonderful creative team, Sarah, Maddie, everybody. I am it just feels amazing to have your work come to life in this way with all these amazing creatives pulling their own passion and heart and spirit and soul and pouring that into it. So I feel really proud of this piece of work. I am excited for everyone to see it. I'm excited to see it in its kind of final form. And I, you know, I really hope it has like a lasting legacy, and I hope that we do all that it is dedicated to proud.
Mm-hmm. I would say bring your mums, bring your aunties, bring your sisters, bring your uncles, bring everybody, bring
your neighbourhoods,
bring your whole neighbourhood. Bring the church. It's definitely a play that is about, that has love and joy at the centre. So just be prepared to like feel all the feelings, like they're welcome, they're encouraged here. Like we will hold you even in the discomfort. So yeah.
And you will laugh because you just will laugh.
Thank you, Hannah. Lots of love.
Thank you, Hannah.
Bye.